Hello, I'm Dr. Susie Godson. I'm a research psychologist and co-founder of Tell Me, a mental health support community for young people. Each month, we talk to a young person who's been using Tell Me to find out more about their life experiences. And this month, we're talking to Amelie. Welcome, Amelie.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Normally, we start by going back to the beginning, going back to childhood and finding out a little bit about you and your life and growing up.
Well, I lived with my mum and my dad from till about 10, and then they were going through a divorce. They're still not properly even divorced, but they're very much separated. And it was kind of from the age of 8 where it was like clear that they weren't together anymore, and it was like a separation. It was like just, it starts from like sleeping in like the different rooms, and then it's like going, like, we're moving now.
And you moved with your mum, but you carried on seeing your dad.
Yeah, it was, there was a period of, like, 2 years, I think, and it was annoying more than anything because it was, I'd do Mondays to Tuesdays with my dad, I think. I mean, no, sorry, Mondays to Wednesdays. And then on the Wednesday, it was, like, Wednesdays to Fridays, and there'd be days with my mum, and then it would be, like, I show up at my dad's, and he's, like, love you, but not my day, and I've been like, okay, and then I go, and it was like a whole like having to get my stuff, like having bags that I needed for the next day at school, or you're just kind of a bit like a parcel, but you understand it's also just quite long.
Yeah, one of the things about having divorced parents or split up parents is you tend to get a mobile phone much quicker than anyone else.
That is true, yeah. It's I got a phone when I was about, definitely in year 7, which a few of my friends didn't. Yeah. I had a screen time thing on it.
Does that work?
It actually did. It was a massive thing that bothered me for many years of my life because it would lock at 9 p.m. and then that was it. We had lots of arguments about it, but I understood it, and also like just locks on Google and apps, which looking back was really understandable and actually good. But you'll always find what, if you want to find something, you will. If you hear about it, it's not much to stop you.
That's true.
The element of mental health wasn't really present in my life in like year 7. It kind of came more in year 9. Year 9 was when I still can't really say or really understand why where the change was. I don't think it was like a sudden thing, but I just kind of stopped doing my work. There's all my books just ended up, if you look at that, just empty. But everyone kind of does like a, I don't want to say like an emo thing, but it's like a, there is every, I think everyone in secondary school will go through a phase of like, okay, I'm sad now, like this is me. But I think I probably did a bit more. I don't really know how to
took
put
it to
that.
Extremes.
Yes.
I think you're right. I actually think that at that point there was a bit of an epidemic of self-harm and, you know, all sorts going on, not just with you, but with like the whole area.
Yeah, definitely.
And do you think there was a kind of a contagion factor?
I do actually, yeah, believe that. With children it's really easy to see, and it doesn't have to be a negative thing. It can be if you see your friend and they're excelling in something, you will want to either be a part of it or incorporate that into your life. And I think that can go positively and negatively, which I think it did with a lot of people.
So what do you think was going on then? Because that was about 2019, wasn't it?
Yeah. 2019 was a good year, I'd say. Then the switch from 2019 to 2020, obviously COVID, I think was massive for everyone, obviously. And it kind of sent people off into very different directions because of, it was only March, was it?
Yeah, COVID? March 2020. Mm.
And I remember that was when, for me personally, I was completely just going downhill, sort of.
And was anyone else aware of this?
Yeah, my friends were really good. I still had them. I still do have them. But it was kind of more of a me pushing people away.
Right. And so what were you feeling?
So I'm not sure how to describe it. It was, because it was so long ago, and also I've blocked out like a lot of that period, also because it was so long, I just kind of remember you're in school, but you're not going to school. Like, you're just in, like, the toilets all day. Like, I'd spend the entire day in, like, the big toilets. And it got to the point where, obviously, that's noticed. I think I did get away with quite a bit. Then there was a point where I remember, like, a key moment. It was being found in the toilets with, like, there was blood, and, like, it was kind of brought into, like, a, okay, now we need to, if a teacher's finding that, they can't just be like, what are you doing, and then drop it. So it got raised, and it got into a higher thing, and my teachers were all great. I owe a lot to a few of the teachers from my school. I have a lot of love for them. And then it was such a long time ago, I can't properly remember all the ins and outs.
Do you remember how you were feeling?
Just not really there. I wasn't a crazy, like, crying and screaming, telling the school to just leave me alone. It was more like a just sad kid moping around.
And do you know why it had progressed to that stage?
So this, I can't really give a exact sort of, I was sad, then I did this because of this. I can't give one solid explanation. The realization of, I remember it. I remember the first time where you're like in your mind, because I think I was probably 11, or I'm not sure. But it's the realization of, oh, wow, I can put something to my skin and not release something, because everyone kind of says, oh, it's like a release for a pain, which obviously I understand. And I understand that being a good explanation. But I don't think that was mine. It was more like, wow, I can do this. This is new. I know it's not good because I know it's not common. And obviously I've never been taught about it. I think everyone will have their own person that has experienced or hurt themselves in a way. There's a feeling and a moment of, I can do this. And it's a slight power, I guess, but obviously a negative one.
How did you find out about it, or how did you learn about it?
I don't think it was anything with social media, which is a lot of, I think a lot more recently, there's so much and you can find, if you're on TikTok even, then you can scroll on a video and it will be someone like sad and they're reaching out for help, but it will be about cutting yourself, and someone that had no idea about that, it can be really like a shock. Because the jump from thinking, oh yeah, when someone gets hurt, like they're hurt, to thinking someone can willingly hurt themselves. And it can be the same injury, but self-inflicted is very different.
It's weird, and especially so young, you know, to make that connection.
But it was also, people would talk about it in school. It was not about me. It was just, it did become a topic, I think, just for children in general. And I'm not sure how that came about, but it did.
Did you know other people at that point who were self-harming?
Yeah. Loads of people in my year. It's sad looking back. A huge amount of predominantly girls in my year. You can just be like, oh, it's a phase, but it was still done. It doesn't matter how old you are when you're doing it or why you're doing it. If you yourself are in a position where you feel the need to hurt yourself, that's awful no matter what.
So that was just year 7, and then things got worse and worse by year 9.
Year 7 to year 8, it wasn't, I think the turning point was year 9, and then turning from year 9 to year 10, but year 10 didn't happen because of COVID. So year 10 didn't happen for the whole of my year, obviously. But year 10 didn't happen to me because of a very different reason. It wasn't because of the virus. And they all experienced online school. I never did that. It was from year 9 being found toilets, it was more of a serious matter then. And then I just, because I've kind of forgotten a lot of stuff, but then it's just a jump from being in school but not properly being in school to then being in hospital, being in general hospital, for a week and then being moved to like an actual like unit.
So into a psychiatric unit.
Yeah.
And was that part of CAMHS?
Yeah. I was in school, then got taken out of school, brought to the hospital, and was then in like the ward in the hospital for a week, and having meetings after meetings, and I don't think I spoke at all, like actually just didn't say anything, because it was a really alien environment, and showering in like weird rooms with someone with you at all times, and it's just foreign. So you were
being watched 24 hours.
Yeah, it was one to one, and I think it was just a jump from that to then just really new. So I just didn't say anything at all.
And were your parents there?
Yeah, they were there, and they wanted me home, but I got transferred to a proper psychiatric unit, not just the hospital.
Yeah, gosh, and what was that like?
It's March and I'm in the hospital for the week, and then they say, okay, we're taking this further.
Right.
We're bringing you to a unit. And I'm obviously scared, but I'm also so detached from the whole situation. It's kind of like I'm watching this happen on like a screen, and it's not really me. So nothing, I don't think I really fought for any, for I just didn't, I had not that many thoughts that were to do with that. I was sort of consumed with my own thoughts.
But you'd obviously seen a psychiatrist when you were in the general hospital.
Yeah, I saw a lot. They're all speaking, and obviously they're analysing you even if you're not talking. And I don't know, it was just very, very detached from every person around me, because I felt, but I wasn't, because I was constantly with someone, and that carried on very predominantly going into the actual unit. It was, so I get, it's, I'm in the week there, then discharged, put in like the van, and then you're brought to the new place, and you have no idea what to expect. I was wondering, like, are we gonna like shower together? Is it gonna be like in a movie? Or is there gonna be like hundreds of, my main thing was, are there gonna be hundreds of people, like crazy people there? I realized that I was totally wrong. I got there and it's 12 patients. So you have 12 bedrooms.
All teenagers.
Yeah, you can go, it's from ages 13 to 18. And I was 13 at the time, so I was the youngest there. And all the people, the patients in the ward, I was sort of like kind of the baby. And it was very, I think when you're put in a place like that and you can't leave, obviously a few of them, if you're informal, they can, but you're mainly locked in, and you have, it's those 12 people or less, and that is your family. Like, I don't have any siblings, so you experience living with someone, and I was there for a year, and
wow.
I think I went to two, so the other one was, I can't remember a lot of it. People will tell me things about, like my parents will tell me things about, and I'll be like, I have no idea what you're talking, like actually I have no clue what time period you're talking about, because I don't remember it.
Why did they move you?
I got transferred. I'd been there for a year. I spent two birthdays in there, and had like Christmas in there, then got transferred to the other one, still on section, so I didn't have leave in the other place either, and that was for, could be 3 months, so not as long, but that is meant to be the amount of time you normally spend in a unit, like 3 to 5 months.
So how much of the fact that you were put in that place was to do with the fact that it was COVID and the world was in lockdown, and so you couldn't have that level of care if you were at home?
Yeah, that's really interesting, and I think about it a lot, because it was a completely new environment for everyone.
Yeah.
And I think only 5 days after I got admitted, lockdown was announced, and it was, you're not allowed outside. And so I was thinking in my head, because I was also, my mental state was really not what it is today. It was going just weird. But in my head, I'm thinking the world is like, I don't know, but it was the link between that and to see all of like the doctors and the nurses, they also had no, and thinking back, I do feel for them, like their life was also changed, but they still had to be there.
Right.
There was a lot of precautions and we'd all like watch the TV and we'd just think like, what's going on outside?
When you've got 12 young people who are all in various states of distress watching a pandemic happen on the TV outside the psych ward, yeah. What the hell?
It was really strange looking back. I don't think about the COVID element of it because I was put in my own form of lockdown nearly the exact same time as the rest of my friends were. So looking back, it's probably a brilliant time to go to a psych ward, but it's also really strange because they have their own version of COVID, which is so different to mine.
Yeah. Had you been given a diagnosis at this point?
Not yet. I think my final diagnosis was psychotic episodes. And I don't know if that can be put into different categories. And I'm not sure. I'm just quite not sure because there was towards like this 8 month to the year, I went worse than better. I got a lot worse. So the beginning was sort of just new territory. I'm obviously very depressed and...
So what kind of treatment were you getting when you were in there?
To be there for a year, which isn't common, but it was with the people that were there. I actually knew one of the girls from before, not properly. And I think the relationships you make in there are different to anything you will ever have with another person because you're obviously not there by choice. You're obviously not stable. I consider them like my sisters. They were there for me. They understand me. Then they understand me in a way that no one else probably ever will because they were in there with me and obviously vice versa. So
they were having similar experiences at the same time and they were around the same age. And
that was an interesting thing. They weren't. I was 13 and there were most of my friends were 16, 17.
Yeah. So you were given some medication.
Yeah.
You weren't doing therapy. How was anybody checking on your progress, you know?
Well, I was on one-to-one for a very long time. That I think is really, really destabilizing for someone that was the state I was in, because I've gone from antidepressants and then you have your sleep, like promethazine, you'd have that every night, which I didn't because I was nocturnal basically. I'd sleep all through the day, which is why I didn't go to the program. And everyone's coming in, opening your blinds, shouting at you to get up. But if you're going to sleep and if you haven't slept all night, you're going to sleep. So that was my jab at rebellion of saying no, because you can't make me sleep. But then there was a point where it was antidepressants, then I got put on antipsychotics. And I still don't know if they helped because, no, I would say they did because chemically they do. So you can't say they're not, but it was the stuff that I was doing, I can't remember what it's called when alarm's pulled, it's everyone's in your room or wherever you are and you're either being restrained or if that was headbanging became a really big thing that I would do and it would just be like hours of smashing your head against the wall. But and then obviously you're restrained because of that and restraining is horrible. It's something that it's obviously legal, which is the horrible part because I was on section and legally they can actually do whatever they like. But from a human point of view, it's horrible because you're being held down by four or five people and they're all saying, you can still hear them. There were loads of, obviously, I'm so detached from this and I'm screaming and whatever, but you're aware of your hands bound, like from behind, and your legs are being sat on. And while all of this is happening, you're in a crisis, like,
yeah,
going, you're just, I think with stuff like experiencing visual things and or hear, like,
yeah, voices
that aren't, well, looking back, obviously not, yeah, but it's difficult because you want to be, you understand why you're being held down and you understand looking back, but the feeling of just all of that happening to you, you see a person with an apron and a little tray and then you're flipped on your side and like your pants are pulled down. It's hard. Like I still have pairs of pants that's got like little tiny blood pricks on them and like rips.
It's just, it all sounds so dehumanizing.
It is. I can't, I still can't describe it. It's just something that happens and you're aware of it. And then it happened more and more and it became, it wasn't just a type of, we're doing this because you're in a crisis and we need to calm you down. It became, I was refusing to take meds orally. So also the medication, the side effects, one side effect, which was massive coming out of finally being discharged, was that the weight gain on antipsychotics, the one I was on, but also a lot of them, is insane, like crazy. And I didn't even realize I was gaining so much weight because it was so quick of a period. Yeah. And also I was preoccupied with, I don't know, but...
So leaving an institution after that length of time, I mean, leaving hospital when you've been in there for 72 hours is difficult because you become institutionalized. But to leave a psych ward after 15 months?
Something like that.
It must have been terrifying.
Yeah. No, it definitely was. Also, I looked so different. I'd put on maybe like 30 kilos.
What?
Yeah, it was crazy.
And you're still taking the meds all through this period?
Yeah, that was the hardest thing.
Right.
Because it's a side effect.
Yeah.
But a massive one.
So. Yeah, it's a massive one, especially for a teenage girl.
Mm. And that was hard. And it was harder because the realization of, when my friends all saw me, obviously they didn't say anything.
Yeah.
If they did, I would have cried. But I was actually unrecognizable, so... I understand looking back, and it's weird looking back at photos. I still like see that in me, and she's a visual representation of, it was just like, it shows the effect of it.
Wow, that's so interesting that you almost disassociate from the person.
Yeah, that sounded weird.
That but went through that because it made you unrecognizable to yourself.
Where I'm at now in my life is so different. I wear vests, and mostly literally every single person I know has seen me in a t-shirt or something like that, or seen a photo of me when I was fat. Like, so it's, I feel kind of full circle about it, but I also do, there is still a sense of intense alienation and disconnection.
From your friends?
Yes, from a whole number of things, from just a period that I lost, and also from myself. There's, I don't want to create a divide, but there is.
Right.
Obviously, it's horrible because it's kind of plastered on me a little bit.
What do you mean by that?
Just like a few like scars and you can see.
Right.
But it's also, it's something that doesn't really bother me anymore. Before, when I was in there, I wouldn't let them see my wounds. I would just ask for a plaster and I'd do like stereo steps or do it all myself.
Yeah. And you, at this point, you're still taking medication?
I'm not.
You're not anymore.
No, I'm not.
When did you?
It's been ages. I'm happy about that.
If you could go back in time, what would you say to yourself?
I think going in at 13, I would have said, be more conscious of what's going on around you because you are letting yourself be. I could have had, at the beginning, I didn't have a grip on anything but within myself. And then as it went on, like 14 to 15, I just slowly, completely deteriorated. To that girl, I'd say, remember that, because you're suicidal, you're not thinking about the outside world. Being suicidal in outside is very different from being suicidal in a hospital, because if you die, I don't know, it's just, it's different. You don't feel like you're in the world, so it doesn't feel like it would be that much of an impact as to being like at home or something.
And can you view that very differently now in terms of your position within your family and within your friendship group?
Definitely. 100%. If when I was there, it was, I didn't care at all. Not one part of me cared about whatever happened. Even about, like, you want to create as much harm to your body as you can. Mm. You're not thinking about, oh my God, when I get out of here, like, and it's summer, I'm going to look like shit. You don't think that at all. It's not once crossing your mind. You just want to whatever. But now I look back and I just think you are a stupid idiot and you've ruined your body. So it's funny looking back, but it's also a reminder, I guess.
And also, you were seriously ill. You were not in your right mind. I mean, that expression comes from somewhere. So you can't really blame 13-year-old you for any of it. You can't tell 13-year-old you that you're an idiot because you weren't thinking straight.
Mm. Yeah, I guess.
And look at you now. Amazing.
Thank you.
So what does the future hold?
I am doing A-levels. I want to do a gap year. I don't know.
Do you know what you want to do with your life?
I think there was a moment in my life where I really wanted to be a mental health nurse and be like in the wards, because there were like three main nurses that really like saved my life, probably.
Yeah.
And to be, I think if I had the opportunity to be like a night shift nurse on one-to-one with someone would be really inspirational.
Emily, thank you for sharing your story. I know that talking about some of that was really hard for you and remembering it was really hard for you, but sharing it is so important and will help other young people who hear it and who've been going through similar things. So thank you.
Thank you too.
You've been listening to the Tell Me About It podcast, and if anything in today's podcast has resonated with you, then we'd love you to join the Tell Me community by downloading the Tell Me app on the App or Play stores, or by going to tellme.app. See you next month.